And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Outsiders podcast. We're here to talk about all things the Lakers. As always, I'm your host, Gary Kester. Joining me today for the first time is one of the rookies of the Lakers Outsiders. Kyle Hartwick is joining us today. Kyle, how's it going?
Good. I'm glad the Lakers Outsiders are giving me the playing time tonight so I can develop my podcast skills.
Yeah, we tried to get some more rookies on the show, but frankly, they were just soft and they need to man up. So they're not going to get their fourth quarter playing time tonight. All right. So for those of you that didn't watch and are still unaware somehow, the Lakers lost again tonight. They fell to 2-11. They lost to Damian Lillard and the new look Portland Trail Blazers. Final score, I think, was 107-93. It was an interesting game. Kyle, what were some of your takeaways from the game tonight?
Well, the game started out very quickly with an 11-second in Damian Lillard three, which has me really, really concerned for what's going to happen against Golden State. You'll see Steph put up two threes in 9 seconds or something ridiculous. But, I mean, it was better than some of the games we've already seen this season. We saw a lot of defensive collapse, like late in, I believe is the second quarter. We just saw D'Angelo Russell kind of give up on a play and nobody else was in the lane. So I think it was Damian Lillard drove to the basket and put an easy one in. That shouldn't happen. I mean, we can't, it just can't happen like that. But overall it was a little better than other games. And we just got to find that positive line with the Lakers this season, especially.
Yeah, and you mentioned that uncontested layup. I think it was one of their two star guards. I can't remember if it was McCollum or Lillard, but yeah, like how many times has that happened this year at the end of a quarter where the Lakers just let a guard go all the way to the rim uncontested as time expires? You know, it's like, I mean, how many times are you going to allow that to happen before somebody steps over and either, you know, fouls the guy, tries to take a charge, tries to block the shot, whatever the case may be? It's like, That's what worries me, honestly, about this group and about the coaching staff is how many times are we going to see the same mistakes over and over and over? And when does coaching come into play? And when do you make those adjustments so that you erase those mistakes so that you make new ones and not duplicate, you know, the same things that you're doing wrong? Speaking of duplicating mistakes, tonight was not a good night for Kobe Bryant. His age really showed. After a fast start, he ended up 6 of 22 from the field tonight. And, I mean, honestly, the performance was worse than just 6 of 22. So what were some things that Kobe was doing wrong tonight and some things that he needs to – or he can do to improve moving forward?
Well, I mean, you kind of touched on this when we were talking pre-show, but – he has this mentality where he'll get off to a really hot start. You know, I think you said he was 3 of 5 at the very beginning. And then he'll get into a funk, miss like 6, 7, 8 straight, something like that. But then he'll think, oh, well, I can just get it back. You know, I'll just keep shooting and something will fall. And then you get to a point where you're 6 of 18 and, you know, you're losing already. And then you end up finishing 6 of 22. He shot a fourth of the Lakers' shots tonight, which you kind of need with Kobe's age and just the way he's been shooting lately, you kind of need a facilitator Kobe at this point. And he's just not been doing that much. I mean, we saw a flash of it in what game was that where he kind of stepped up. Do you remember?
The Pistons game, a game they won, surprisingly.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we could see facilitator Kobe more often, then, you know, maybe we won't be, you know, maybe turning back into team tank here. But yeah, it's just frustrating because I haven't been a lifelong Lakers fan, like, you know, most of the people writing for Lakers Outsiders. So I didn't get to see as a fan, the Kobe that, you know, went 81 against, oh God, I'm blanking on his name.
Toronto, Jalen Rose.
Jalen Rose. Yeah. I didn't get to see that as a Lakers fan. I only saw it on ESPN recaps and stuff. So it's just kind of disappointing for me to come into this position where I don't get to see the great Kobe that, you know, used to be, you know, a star in the league.
Yeah, and it's especially frustrating for those of us that, you know, had the privilege of just watching Prime Kobe on a nightly basis. And, you know, there are times where I feel like in his mind, he still thinks he can do the things that he did back in 2005, 2006, 2007, in those years where he could just, you know, where he shot a fourth of the shots and they would win. You know, like it was a good thing if he shot that much, because if he's not shooting, then you've got guys like Kwame Brown or Chris Mim or Smush Parker taking shots. It's like now there's some talent on the team, you know, even though it's young talent, you know, you just have to see him trust a little bit more. And he talked about that after their last game, where he talked about being a proponent of ball movement. And he kind of joked about how, like, him of all people is talking about it. And then he comes out in this game and he was just firing away right from the start. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he mentioned, after the game, that he was just trying to get the guys off to a hot start. And, you know, that's great and all, but, you know, this team is better suited when he is using that defensive attention that he gets from defenses still, and he's making plays for others. You know, when he's able to create open looks for Clarkson and Russell and find Randall down underneath the basket and things like that, that's when this team is at their best, because everybody's getting a rhythm. You know, it goes back to even like 2009, 2010, you know, those years, there were times where he would shoot so much and it would completely take guys out of the game. And so when the fourth quarter came down to it and those guys had to step up, they hadn't been in a rhythm all game because he had been shooting a lot of shots, you know. So, and then another thing that's kind of irritated me lately with Kobe is not only the bad shots, but the bad shots lead to runouts for the other team. And he's one of the guys not getting back, you know. Can you talk about that a little bit, kind of the different areas that his shot selection is hurting the Lakers besides just obviously the inefficient scoring?
I mean, I think 12 of his shots tonight were contested jumpers from mid-range-ish, which I think, I don't know how many of them were off of ISO plays or anything like that, but you talked about not getting back on defense after a miss. I don't know if just because he's 37 years old and he's, you know, had these injuries, or if he's just not motivated to get back, but he needs to get back, because if he doesn't, then it's going to be a 5-on-4 on the opposite end for a few seconds while he's chugging along down. And, you know, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum can just take over. They're young. They have the fresh legs. And not to take anything away from D'Angelo Russell or Jordan Clarkson, but they're not the best defenders in those types of situations. They need someone who can have their back. And if, you know, there's only two players behind them, then you kind of lose that transition play.
Yeah, there's just been way too many buckets in transition given up. And a lot of them, like tonight, were just breakaways. Like, there's literally nobody back on defense because, you know, Kobe takes a tough shot, it's a long rebound, Portland gets it, and they got a guy leaking out. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's hurting the team in more areas than one, you know. So, you know, that's something they've really got to clean up. And my big issue with this is, I know Kobe has obviously the reputation. He's a Hall of Famer, top 10 player all time. And, you know, we love him for all those reasons. But at the same time, you know, if that was D'Angelo Russell or maybe even Jordan Clarkson taking those shots – and just throwing up brick after brick after brick and not getting back on defense, you know that Byron Scott's going to pull them right away. You know, so there's kind of a double standard there. I know, like I said, Kobe has the reputation, but at the same time, if you're Byron Scott, you're coaching for your job at this point. You know, the fan base is unhappy with you. You won 21 games last year. You're on pace for even less this year. And, you know, you've got to just put the five out there that help you win. And, you know, it was no coincidence that when Kobe came back in, I think it was a 5-point game, the Blazers just ran away, you know, because the Lakers just, they defer to him too much, you know, and that's a problem. You know, there are times when Kobe gets the ball late in the shot clock and it's like, you know, there's only so much he can do. But yeah, I mean, he's got to find a better balance between scoring, and when he scores, he needs to try and get closer to the basket, because he's been efficient when he gets into the paint this year. But yeah, he's just got to stop shooting the shots that he could make back, you know, when he was 25 or 27, and start focusing on shots that he can make now when he's 37. So
I think he really just needs to be more honest with himself, because he's not getting these shots to fall. And I think he needs to be honest with himself and tell Byron, like, hey, you know, I used to be good. Like, I used to be this top five player in the league, and now I'm ranked 93 on ESPN's, you know, preseason rankings for players. Like, I'm washed up in a way. Yeah, I'm not saying that he is. It's just he hasn't been having this rhythm, and he's getting played 37 minutes a night on some nights, and you just can't do that with a player like him, just because, I mean, he's aging, and that's gonna. Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's the unfortunate thing. He was playing at such a high level before the Achilles injury, and you know, all this, the injuries that piled on top of that. That, you know, I think in his mind, he's still, you know, he was only 34 then, you know, so that's what, 3 years ago. So I think in his mind, he can still do some of these things, and you know, his body's just not letting him. So, but yeah, Byron, you know, it kind of made me laugh when he was hired. A lot of people were like, oh, you know, Byron's a, you know, he's a militaristic guy, like he's a strict coach, and he'll, you know, he'll enforce, you know, rules upon Kobe and pull him out when he needs to. And my biggest fear was like, they're friends. Like, he's not going to do that. It's like, I mean, how many times can you, you know, if you're coaching one of your friends, tell him like, hey, you're being terrible tonight, like, go sit down. You know, you just kind of give him a little more leeway. And I think that's what Byron does with Kobe. And like we said, it's just frustrating. Hopefully they make some adjustments, and, you know, honestly, you know, I would keep lowering Kobe's minutes. Give him some more nights off if you need to, like, get his legs fresh. Because, I mean, most of his shots he misses short. So, you know, that's problematic. But
I really hope he doesn't play both nights of this upcoming back to back. I really hope. Or if he does not play both nights, I hope he doesn't play like 37 in the first night, and you know, he has trouble walking out to his car after interviews.
That should say more to Kobe than anything about his body, and you know, just the limitations that he has now. Is that it's like, dude, you used to be able to play 48 minutes a night and go out there and, you know, just play at a high level, and now you play 36, 37 minutes, and like you're struggling to walk afterwards. Like, if that's not your body saying like waving the white flag, like I'm done, like I've had enough, then I don't know what is. So. Another key part of the game that a lot of people noticed was the short rotation, and included in that, obviously, Tariq Black didn't play once again. And by the way, for those fans that didn't know, today is Tariq Black's 24th birthday, so we want to wish Tariq Black a happy birthday. I included him in the thumbnail on the site for the article, or for the link to this. Some people might not know who he is because we haven't seen him in forever, but that's okay. But him and Larry Nance Jr. both didn't play tonight. What do you think that is?
I don't want to go too far, but I really think that Byron Scott has a problem with the youth on this team. And Larry Nance, I think he didn't play tonight just because Byron probably took a look at the box score and saw, oh, well, Larry Nance was a minus 27 the other night. Well, my analytical mind tells me that I shouldn't play him tonight at all. And then with Tariq Black, I really don't know that Byron Scott knows who he is. He had what I think it was like two games earlier in the season where he played like 12 minutes ish and he was a part of the rotation, and then he's played some garbage time minutes, but other than that, he has been non-existent.
Yeah, Byron has this just insistence on playing Brandon Bass at the five. And, you know, we've heard that, you know, they want to give him 15, 20 games to try and figure it out, see if they have a role for him, because they have such a logjam at power forward, which is Bass's natural position. But doing that, you're sitting Tariq Black, who, I mean, a lot more times than not is an effective player off the bench because he defends. You know, no, he's not Roy Hibbert, like defending the rim or anything like that, but he's a guy that defends, has a constant high motor. He's going to attack the glass, and he's just going to give you like energy and effort and a physical presence down low. So, you know, very rarely do negative things come from Tariq Black being on the floor, you know, when he's in there with that second unit.
Right. And if Byron wants to play small ball, like Tariq Black, he's not that big. Like, he's, I think he, what, how tall? I don't know how tall he is. Like, maybe 6'10"?
They list him, I think, at 6'10", but I've heard from, like, the local LA reporters that he's maybe, like, 6'6", 6'7".
Okay. So, I mean, if he wants to play small ball, Tarik Black is a small center. Like, you're not going to go, like, I think Brandon Bass is listed at 6'9", and he just isn't a center. He's not playing defense straight up. And he contributed a bit more tonight. Like, I thought we were going to go through Brandon Bass to make this, you know, grand, magnificent comeback in the fourth quarter, but then it just didn't happen. And that shows you where the state of the Lakers are, though we're trying to make a comeback with Brandon Bass. But yeah. I will say one positive about that is that there's no more Kelly Bass rotations, and that was just disastrous early on. So yeah. Brandon Bass at the five hasn't been working, but tonight it wasn't horrid as it's been in the past.
And, you know, a lot of people have kind of bagged on Bass, and I guess I have a little bit too, but I don't really blame him for what has happened on the court, you know, because he's playing out of position, and it's tough for guys to do that, especially when, you know, he's used to playing power forward where he can kind of hang out at that elbow area, and, you know, he's put at the five, and now the Lakers seem to want to put him on the block more than anything. And he's going up against a guy that's 6'11", 7 foot, you know, a guy that has a good 5-6 inches on him. And it's just completely taken him out of his game. And he's trying to defend as well as he can. He has blocked a few shots, like, here and there, which is good. But, you know, just, I mean, he can only do so much playing out of position like that. It was just like Ryan Kelly playing at the three last year, you know, just constantly playing small forward. You know, I mean, there's so many good small forwards in today's game that are just, you know, so much more, you know, athletic and quicker and faster. And, I mean, it's impossible to think that Ryan Kelly can be effective both defensively and offensively there. It's the same thing with Brandon Bass. So, you know, just with Tarik Black, he's so athletic and he's so strong that he can play that five position effectively. So hopefully we'll see him soon. And Nance is the same way, the athleticism and the strength and just the energy and the effort.
Yeah, he brings so much energy to the court all the time, and he never gives up on a play. You see instances where the Lakers will be kind of collapsing on defense. They'll just be like, no, I got to get to the ball, got to get to the shot that's going off. And it's really impressive that, you know, we got him at 27. I know he was projected a lot later in the draft, but I think the Lakers really have a good role-playing piece for the future in Larry Nance Jr. and maybe a future dunk contest winner.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, as somebody who lives in Boise, I mentioned this before we went on, being a, you know, Boise State fan and all that, he played in the Mountain West and would just dunk on us so much every year that, like, I was so happy for him to graduate and get out of there. But the Lakers did surprise me with that pick at 27. But, you know, so far from what we've seen, it's been a solid pick. You know, it's been really good. So
it's kind of been the sleeper pick from the first round for me, honestly. Like, you expect things out of Kristaps Porzingis and Jahlil Okafor and Karl-Anthony Towns, but nobody really expected anything out of Larry Nance Jr. at 27. He's been contributing, albeit he's contributing to, you know, a lottery at best team, but he's contributing. He's making his worth.
Oh yeah, well, and the big thing for him is being that young and understanding his role too. You know, a lot of players don't think that. They think, I mean, because if you're drafted in the first round, you're coming from a team where you were probably the first or second option offensively, and then for him to have to take a role where he's like the 10th man in the rotation, and he just understands, like, I'm a guy that has to play defense, I have to hustle, you know, just play hard and just bring energy, and, you know, he fully understands that, and I think that's why he's been so effective. And well, hopefully he could be, you know, just a nice rotational player for the Lakers in the future. And we'll transitioning now to starters for the Lakers' future. Let's talk about a little bit. Tonight was an interesting matchup for backcourts. With on the Portland side, you had Damian Lillard, who, you know, a bona fide all-star. He's dude, just a stud. And CJ McCollum, who's been having a great year, up against D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson. What were some of the things that you took away from that matchup tonight from both of those guys?
I was actually kind of really impressed with D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson tonight going up against, you know, Damian Lillard, who is top 5 point guard in the league right now, and CJ McCollum, who's a rising star on this you know, I mean, Portland wasn't expected to be really anything this year. I think they were projected even lower than the Lakers, which tells you something. But I mean, I think what was D'Angelo Russell's stat line? Did he finish at 13?
He had 13-9-6.
13-9-6, which is, I mean, it's pretty impressive. Like that rebound stat, getting that close to a double-double is awesome. Would that, I think that would have been his first career. And then Jordan Clarkson had 19. He had a kind of a slow start, but I think that slow start can be attributed to Kobe taking so many shots in the first 10 minutes.
Right.
But they both really exploded, and I'm just really impressed with D'Angelo, and I'm not buying into all of the rather hateful comments on Twitter about him being a bust and should have drafted Porzingis or Okafor or anyone. Like, he's going to be great.
That talk always cracks me up, because had the Lakers drafted Porzingis or Okafor, you know, with Byron as their head coach, who's to say they wouldn't be struggling, you know?
Exactly. He'd be calling them soft and not giving them fourth quarter time and whatever.
That has to be taken into effect. Like, those guys are in positions, especially Okafor. Okafor is like their number one option offensively. They force feed him the ball. So, you know, he gets plenty of opportunities, and I don't know what it is now, but when I wrote about him probably a week or two ago, he was up to around like 35 minutes a game, which Russell, I think, had 36 minutes tonight, which was great. You know, that's the first time he's gotten like extensive minutes like that, which needs to happen more. But like you said, he was playing extremely well. You know, he's like, what I love about Russell is his ability to pick and choose his spots. You know, coming off the pick and roll, he does such a good job of kind of manipulating the defender. And if they play up, that's when he seems to go by. But teams don't really respect his jumper right now. I've noticed that defenses give him a lot of space, so he's been taking those elbow, you know, 15-foot pull-up jumpers. And he's been pretty good with them. You know, his field goal percentage hasn't been great so far, but it's not because of the shot selection. You know, he's taking good shots and all of that. You know, it's just a matter of knocking down shots, which I think he will. I just think he needs to strengthen his lower body more. Because most of his shots, like his three-pointers, are short. So he just got to add some strength to the legs, because that's a little farther shot out, obviously, than college. But Clarkson did what Clarkson does. You know, he was finishing well around the basket, you know, just probing inside, just breaking down the defense and just making plays. And, I mean, it's just a prime example tonight was as far as how good and how fun this backcourt can be in the future, right?
Right, yeah, and they're gonna be so much fun to watch over the next 10 years. If we can hold on to both of them, which I don't think we'll have a problem with. Mm-hmm. I think they both know that they are the future of this franchise, along with Julius Randle. And I think I don't know if they'll take less money, but I think they'll be more willing than a lot of superstars would be, because they just work so well together. Mm-hmm. Like, you get these flashy passes out of D'Angelo Russell, and he actually started, I think it was 2 for 3 from the three-point line tonight. And like you said, a lot of his shots are falling short from all the way out there, because he does need to work on that lower body strength. But he is a prospect still. He still has a lot of potential left. And I don't think we'll even see the best of D'Angelo Russell by the end of this year or even by the end of next year. I think he's just going to continue to improve and continue to grow as a player. And, you know, we know what we're going to get out of Jordan Clarkson, and we know what we're going to get out of Julius Randle, as long as he improves that right hand. But D'Angelo Russell, he's just untapped potential everywhere. And right, he needs that system to teach him all of the things that he needs to know. But from what I've seen off the court from him, he is a natural born leader as well. Always talking to his guys. And Harrison wrote the article the other night for Silver Screen and Roll about how he went and saw the defenders and Anthony Brown. And I just think that's one of the coolest things. He spent his Saturday night at a basketball game. And it just shows dedication to the game in general.
Yeah, and that kind of, to me, puts that whole rumor of, like, how he's gone Hollywood too fast to rest. You know, like, this kid on a Saturday night in Los Angeles is spending his time watching a D-League game because one of his rookie teammates is playing, you know?
Yeah.
I think, personally, I thought that rumor was made up to save face for Byron a little bit, you know? And it's, I mean, it's unfair. I mean, I don't, we speculate obviously, because we don't know what happens in these guys' personal lives and all that. But, you know, it's just, it's been kind of crazy how picked on, I want to say, for lack of a better term, that Russell has been. You know, he's just a 19-year-old kid, and it's just been crazy. But he did play really well tonight. He really had a good rhythm until he hurt his ankle. Right. He had to get retaped, and he came back and it seemed like he was a bit off. So I wonder if that was bothering him a little bit. But overall, a strong performance. You mentioned Julius Randle. What were some strengths and some negatives that you saw from him tonight?
Some strengths. I mean, he did finish with a double-double tonight, correct?
Yes, he had 13 points and 13 rebounds.
Yeah, so, I mean, he finished with his second double-double in a row, which is nice. Might be even more. I don't remember past, you know, the last game. I try not to sometimes.
Try to forget him.
Yeah. But he's got to get that right hand going. And that's – it's just something he could have gotten away with in high school and college to not have that right hand fully developed. But in the NBA, you're playing with the best of the best. And when you're going up to the basket and you're not being able to finish with that right hand, you just got to spend so much time in the gym working on that. And I think he has the work ethic and the time to do it, but it's just one thing that we need to see a bit sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mentioned right when we started about repetitive mistakes. And, you know, I'm just wondering if the coaching staff is bringing this up to him that, like, hey, you've got to work on using your right hand because defenders are playing him to get back to that left. You know, there were so many times tonight because he only shot 5 of 15, you know, and a few of his makes were off of just tip-ins off of his misses, which is good that he stayed persistent. But he's been getting himself into tough spots. Like, there was two or three instances where he picked up his dribble, like, underneath the basket behind the backboard and tried to force up a shot. And, you know, Ed Davis actually said it after the game that, you know, he needs to work on his right hand. But he said if he even said, I can't remember the direct quote, but he said something along the lines of, once Randle figures out, you know, how to finish and use his right hand more effectively, he's going to be almost unstoppable in this league. So,
I mean, the dude came out in his first two games as picking on Dirk Nowitzki and, you know, just getting in everyone's face. So I think it's Kevin Garnett too, I remember. And so I don't know what's happened since then, whether he's been a little defeated, because I mean, he's never been on a team that's been 2-11. And I don't know if he's just a little upset with himself, upset with the team, upset with the coaching staff, upset with the front office even, but he needs to get through this funk and, you know, don't let off court things, it might not even necessarily be off court things, on court things affect him on the court. Yeah. He's just got to move on to the next play.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, because he was here last year, but this is basically his rookie season. You know, he played 14 minutes last year. So, you know, the inconsistency is going to be there. There's going to be nights where he looks phenomenal, like against Dallas when he put up 22 and 15. And then there's going to be some nights where, you know, he's in foul trouble and he's like putting up 4 points and 5 rebounds or whatever the case may be. But, you know, he definitely has his flaws, you know, like most 20-year-olds do, you know. Andrew Wiggins isn't a perfect player, but, I mean, he's still pretty damn good. But, you know, like you mentioned, he's got to learn to just finish better with his right hand, which is kind of crazy to me. Well, it's not – I mean, it's a little crazy just because he's so good at dribbling with his right hand and passing with his right hand. It's just weird that he can't really make layups with his right hand and he just can't finish. But once he finishes, you know, figures that out and figures out how to consistently hit his jump shot, you know, he's going to be a force in this league because his physical attributes and his talent is just, it's so unique. But tonight was a good example. Like I said, he was 5-15, but he went and grabbed 13 rebounds. You know, he's finding ways to impact the game in multiple areas. And I think that's something that all three of these guys in terms of Russell, Clarkson and Randle, they all impact the game in multiple areas. They're not one-dimensional. Even though Clarkson might, you know, be sometimes limited to just a score, you know, they can all impact the game in different areas, which is huge. So that's going to be something that's going to be fun to look forward to in terms of their development and just rounding out their games collectively. So, all right. So I think that pretty much sums it up for tonight's game. I mean, the gist of it was there was good, there was bad. The Lakers competed, but they lost. So not much different in the old loss category. They're 2-11 now. And barring a miracle, they're going to be 2-12 because on Tuesday they travel to Golden State to take on the 15-0 defending champion Golden State Warriors. So
I'll put $5 on that game on the Lakers. Turn that into a quick 50 or something like that.
I was going to say, that's about all I think I would put down on this game. as a Tennessee Titans fan, I put $5 down on us in Jackpot, Nevada last year at 40-1 odds to win the AFC. And yeah, that's $5 I'll never get back. So.
But it was a potential $200. So
It was. Yeah. I was optimistic. I was a little too optimistic, but
you got Marcus Mariota out of it, so hey, it worked out in the end.
It works out. So if the Lakers, you know, suck this year and they get Ben Simmons or Scal Labissiere, one of those guys, like it'll be worth it. But no, the Warriors on Tuesday, obviously, you know, realistically, the Lakers have next to like maybe 0.5% chance of winning this game. So we'll just for the sake of this, we'll assume they're going to lose. Here's the over under. Are they going to lose by more or less than 30 points?
Well, I had a question on my account, more or less than 40. So that shows you where I'm at in this state. My heart wants to say they're going to lose by less than 30. But have you seen Steph Curry this year? Like if they put out the lineup of death, then there's no way it's going to be under 30 points for the deficit.
Yeah, I mean the Lakers have surprised us before. I mean, even last year, like they actually beat the Warriors at home in a game that actually upset me at the time because I was full on board Team Tank then, and it's like this is such a terrible win. And now, like with my heart, if I'm picking with my heart, like I feel like okay, the Lakers are gonna be fired up to play the champs. They're gonna come out and play hard. And they'll give them a game. But if I'm picking with my head, I'm honestly saying I'm taking the over 30 points on this one. You know, Klay Thompson always just lights us up, and like you said, Steph Curry, you know, coming off an MVP year, his game has just gone to another level, which is absurd. You know, I mean, honestly, you know, it might be like a caught up in the moment kind of thing, but like there's a legitimate argument for him being the best player in the game right now. You know, so
I don't even think there's a question about it at this point in time. He is the best player.
Yeah,
like he started out the season in the first five or six games projected to make 462 3-points, just smashing his record, which is the current record of all time. And everyone thought at the beginning of the season, oh, he could get 300, but nobody ever expected him to, you know, be on pace for 460 at some point. And it's just insane the level of game that he is playing right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's just absurd. And that whole team, everything's clicking. There's no championship hangover. And we mentioned this off air before we went on. Maybe this is a tryout. This is an audition for Luke Walton for his next coaching job.
Shout out to David Chia for mentioning that on his Twitter account.
Yeah. So, Lakers, if you notice exquisite ball movement, unselfish play, good defense, and all that, maybe take some notes and give Luke a call back after the season if that's when he's available.
You have his number, so
yeah. Just go back to the directory. You know it's still in there. All right, so let's. I'm gonna have plenty of alcohol prepped for Tuesday night, but let's take some questions regarding, I guess, just anything that the fans wanted to know. So we got a few questions in here. The first one is, has Byron Scott done anything positive for this team, or has he just been that bad?
And this is the one I actually saw and kind of cheated with before we even started talking, before we came on air. I think he does have some positives, and it goes against everything I've ever said on Twitter and in any article. Mm-hmm. But Byron Scott has improved his coaching throughout the season so far. he started out running rotations with, you know, Ryan Kelly and Brandon Bass, which should never, ever, ever, ever be a thing. And he quickly abandoned that after, I think it was like six games. And even tonight, like, Brandon Bass just seemed a little more comfortable at center. Like, mm-hmm. I think these reps are getting him a little more comfortable. He's never going to be, like a good against DeAndre Jordan or another lights out center. But, like, he did feel a little more comfortable. And then he also started staggering D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson's minutes tonight, which I think helped throughout the entire game to keep the Lakers at least really kind of close in the game. Wasn't a total blowout. So I think there are some points of improvement, but I don't think it's enough improvement for him to be able to keep his job at the end of the season or maybe even during the season.
Yeah. This is the thing that I noticed last year with Byron that kind of irritates me is, like, eventually he kind of figures things out in a way, but he does it about 15 to 20 games after, like, literally my entire Twitter feed already knows, like, how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, eventually it's like he has an anonymous Twitter account and just goes on and was like, oh, I guess maybe I should try that. But, like, today, like you mentioned, he staggered the rotations finally of D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson, because, honestly, I think one of those two should always be on the court at the same time, whether, you know, you want to throw Huertas out there for 10 minutes or so. Either Russell or Clarkson have got to be out there at all times, one or the other, if not both. But tonight, like, he took Lou Williams off the ball finally, which was nice. He wasn't the backup point guard. Like I mentioned, though, like, it shouldn't take 13 games to figure that out. You know, Lou Williams, this is his 11th year in his career. He's not a point guard. He's a two guard that scores and gets to the free throw line. So,
like a wizard, he gets to the free throw line.
Like, he is just ridiculous when it comes to free throws. Like, if you get anywhere near that guy, he's gonna draw a foul on you. But that gets him into trouble sometimes. But and then this year, we've all noticed that Byron's tried to use small ball. I don't think he fully grasps, like, how to use it effectively. Because he's got, like I said, Brandon Bass at the five or whatever. Like, tonight, I think it was in the third quarter. It was either Clarkson or Russell at the point, Lou at the two, Nick Young at the three, and Kobe at the four with Bass at the five. And it's like, that's great that you're trying to use small ball, but that's not how it works. Like, you can't just throw that lineup out there and expect to get stops. And, you know, he talks about rebounding a lot. And I don't care how well you box out in your form. If I'm 5'11", if I go out there and try and box out a guy that's 6'9", it doesn't matter what technique I use. I'm not getting the rebound. Like I'm just too small, you know? So at a certain point, you know, technique and manning up, that doesn't play into it. It's the fact that, you know, those guys are just bigger. They're going to get rebounds, you know? So, but I'll give him credit. He has adapted a little bit, you know. I just don't think he's fully grasping how exactly to do it. So hopefully he'll get better with it. And this was kind of a random question. Just says, know of any websites with deep stats? I don't know if you know of any specifically. Personally, I just use NBA.com a lot. There's a lot of really in-depth stats that you can go to, a lot of advanced statistics, and whether it's team-specific or player-specific, or a good one is that I try to use every so often is nyloncalculus.com. It's a really good site. Kyle, do you have any other sites that you use?
I mean, for past past seasons, I sometimes use Basketball Reference. It's easy. It's an easy site to go to, pretty solid. And then, like you said, I use NBA.com. And then for in-game stuff, it's not really advanced statistics or anything, but when I'm always, like, watching the games, I have the ESPN box score open. I always have that running because that auto refreshes, and it's so nice to have up while watching the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So this is the next question is a question I think we get, like, every single day. who is a better coach for the Lakers out there right now than Byron Scott?
I've had this conversation so many times on Twitter, through text message, talking to strangers in coffee houses. But I don't know, like, anybody, like, Lakers Twitter would be a better coach. Gosh, Gary, you would be a better coach than Byron Scott.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, even though it doesn't sound like a great one.
Hashtag hire Gary. Luke Walton is one we've brought up in this podcast and then before the show. Some people have thrown out Brad Stevens if they could somehow lure him away from the Celtics, but I don't think that's going to happen. Some available previous head coaches, Scott Brooks, Tom Thibodeau, if you want Kobe to play 47 minutes a night and have literally no stamina to walk out to his car after the game.
He's going to take a segue out to his car.
Oh, he would have to be carted out to his car. as a former Bulls fan, I can attest to that Tom Thibodeau would not be a good coach for Kobe Bryant. But realistically, I think they just need to take a chance on a young guy, a young coach out of college. It would have been amazing if they got Shaka Smart before he went to Texas. But I don't think he's going to be lured away from that big Texas contract that he got, which I still am in shock that he went to Texas of all the schools he could have gone to. Yeah. But really, really at this point, Bernie Bickerstaff is our best choice for head coach for the Lakers.
Hey, winningest coach in Lakers history. So I think it was what, 4-1?
So, Bernie 2016, let's do it. Hashtag has a couple different meanings, but
I was gonna say I think Harrison Fagan would be a better coach than Byron Scott. Not by much though. So Harrison, if you're watching, don't get too ahead of yourself. but no, I think we all agree that it would be nice to have a younger coach, maybe that doesn't have head coaching experience, that could grow with this young core. You know, a guy a lot of people brought up, obviously Luke Walton. If you want a coach with experience, you have Tom Thibodeau. You know, a guy that I really like. I mean, basically for me personally, I just always said, just go get somebody off of San Antonio staff and just call it good. You know, because they're just going to – just under Popovich, they're going to understand, you know, just how they've been effective throughout all these years. So, but one guy specifically off that staff I really like is Ettore Messina. Messina, you know, was effective coaching overseas. You know, him and David Blatt were, like, very popular overseas as coaches, had a lot of success over there. And, you know, I think he's – once he gets a chance to be a head coach in the NBA, I think he's going to do a really good job. So – that's another guy to keep an eye on. But as far as who's a better coach out there, I just, you know, I mean, Byron's had success with certain teams, but I just don't see him having success with this group. I just think that they got to eventually, whether it's midseason or after the season, they're going to have to just go in another direction if they want to utilize this team to its, you know, maximum potential. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of games left. But and then the final question here is, why isn't Julius Randle facilitating as much?
I think it kind of goes back to what I brought up earlier. Like he seems defeated, and it sucks to see him this way. But I'm trying to remember what I said before the show, because I actually said something kind of decent, but it's been like an hour now. I don't remember. but he's got to understand that he's going to have off nights, and he's going to have to, you know, be the guy. Sure, he can lead in a transition play, but he's going to have to pass it away to a shooter. He's not going to be able to just, you know, drive to the basket and try to finish with his left hand. Like he's got to make the better plays. And I think it might be a mental thing before anything really. And it might be because Byron Scott's in his ear telling him to do something different. I mean, you really, really don't know why he's not being that facilitator. And so it's really hard for me to pinpoint what he needs to do differently. But I think he just needs to get out of this funk.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, he has the ability. We've seen it before. We've seen him make some really great passes both in the half court and the transition. But they're, you know, naturally for, you know, a young player, there's times where he just has tunnel vision. You know, he gets himself in the bad spots. He makes up his mind that he's going to attack the basket to score, and he's going to put up a shot no matter what. And, you know, he's missing guys that are open, you know, out on the wing. There's been a few times this year where he he'll catch the ball like on one elbow and he'll dribble towards the middle, and you know, like it'll be like Clarkson or Russell on the opposite wing where their defender drops down to help and he just makes a simple pass out there for a three. You know, he just got to do more of that. And as far as tonight, like he just kept getting himself into tough spots. Like I mentioned, he kept getting like pinned behind the backboard, and you know, it's almost impossible to find a good passing angle out of there. So, I think, you know, for him, it's just, you know, seeing the floor better and just getting himself into better spots, and he'll be fine because that ability is definitely there. So
yeah, he's basically a rookie, like you said earlier. He's younger than me, 20 years old. Like it's insane how much potential he has at really any given skill. Like obviously he's not going to be a Steph Curry 3-point shooter at any point in his career, but he really has growth on any aspect of the game, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what people have to realize with this team is there's going to be a lot of growing pains. You know, there's going to be a lot of off nights, and you know, there's going to be a lot of excitement when they play well. And you just kind of have to take the good with the bad and just kind of roll with it throughout the year. So, you know, it is what it is. You just got to appreciate the progress that they're going to make, and you know, just like I said, just roll with it. You know, in due time, hopefully they'll figure everything out and become consistent players in this league. So. All right. I think that's going to do it for us. Kyle, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think we covered a lot of stuff really. And, I look forward to Tuesday night's game. It's going to be really fun to watch.
I was going to say, it makes one of us that is looking forward to that game. The good thing about that, I'll say, is that we get it over with like relatively early before we have to play them. I think three more times. So
this will really be the first team that we've played that's really, really good. Like you look at our previous schedule, and there was really like it was a bunch of middle of the pack teams coming up to this big game against the reigning champs, and it's just going to be really scary to see how we fare against, you know, the Spurs or the Cavs or the Bulls or the Clippers or, you know, some of the Eastern teams that have been doing really well, like. The Knicks with Kristaps Porzingis have been doing amazing for what everyone thought they were going to be. So this will be really the first time that we see the Lakers go up against a contender.
Yeah. So it's going to be a big test for them to see how they handle it. So it'll be interesting to say the least. So we'll definitely be looking forward to that. So thank you to those that watched along with us. Thanks to those that sent in the questions. We love all your guys' questions. Some of them we don't use on air because they're a little out there. I'll just say that. But Kyle,
I'll answer that one. I'll answer that one off air.
just shoot me a message or something. We'll answer.
Yeah.
Kyle, thanks for jumping on today. This was your first time on. So we'll definitely have to get you on here a lot more, especially if Ryan Kellip here is soft and, you know, can't make an appearance on the podcast again. So if you're Ryan, if you watch this, I'm calling you out. So get it together. But no, thanks again for everybody that followed along, and we'll see you guys next time.